seeking the nod. Four candidates asking fellow Democrats' approval, carrying the party's campaign against re-electing Senator Charles Grassley. Candidates Tom Feagan, Rob Hogue, Patty Judge, and Bob Krause debating side by side on this live special edition of Iowa Press.
Funding for Iowa Press was provided by Friends, the Iowa Public Television Foundation.
I'm a dad.
I am a mom.
I'm a kid.
I'm a kid at heart. I'm a banker.
I'm an Iowa banker.
No matter who you are, there is an Iowa banker who is ready to help you get where you want to go. Iowa Bankers, allowing you to discover the genuine difference of Iowa banks.
Iowa Communications Network. The availability of high-speed broadband service is essential to fulfilling the promise of a connected Iowa. ICN's Broadband Matters campaign showcases the importance of delivering broadband to all corners of Iowa. Information is available at broadbandmatters.com. Iowa Community Foundations, an initiative of the Iowa Council of Foundations, connecting donors to the causes and communities they care about, for good, for Iowa, forever. Details at iowacommunityfoundations.org. The Associated General Contractors of Iowa, the public's partner in building Iowa's highway, bridge, and municipal utility infrastructure.
The Arlene McKeever Endowment Fund at the Iowa Public Television Foundation, a fund established to support local programming on Iowa Public Television. For decades, Iowa Press has brought you political leaders and newsmakers from across Iowa and beyond, celebrating more than 40 years of broadcast excellence on statewide Iowa Public Television. This is a special Iowa Press debate edition, the U.S. Senate Democratic primary. Here is Dean Borg.
Welcome to our special live debate edition of Iowa Press. Each of Iowa's seats in the United States Senate comes up for election only every 6 years. So when it happens, the incumbent can usually expect a vigorous campaign from the opposite party. In this fall's election, six-term Senator Republican Charles Grassley is asking voters to return him for another 6 years. Four Democrats seeking their party's nomination to end Grassley's tenure are on our stage tonight. Tom Feagan, 57 years old, lives in Clarence. He's an attorney, served 3 years in Iowa's Senate. 49-year-old Rob Hogue of Cedar Rapids, also an attorney, and now serving in the Iowa Senate. Patty Judge, 72 years old, living on a farm near Albion. She's a former registered nurse, but later holding public office as a state senator, Iowa's Secretary of Agriculture, and Lieutenant Governor. Bob Krause is 66 years old, former state representative, living in Fairfield. He's president of a charitable organization, the Veterans National Recovery Center, and he's retired from Iowa's Department of Transportation. As far as I can tell, in researching your backgrounds, candidates, all of you are from eastern Iowa or southeast Iowa, in your case, Ms. Judge. All have served or are serving now in the Iowa legislature as a commonality, and all have either attended or hold degrees from the University of Iowa, and all, to the best of my knowledge, except Raug Hobe, grew up on farms. And so those are common denominators. Tonight, we're going to try to find those denominators that differentiate you. And I'll be moderating, and we have an audience here in the program for Iowa Public Television's Maytag Auditorium, and we're conducting this as we would any Iowa Press program. No opening or closing statements or preset debate rules, just ideas and issues. As I said, I'll be moderating, and I'm joined by political reporters James Lynch of the Gazette, published in Cedar Rapids, and Radio Iowa's Kay Henderson.
Mrs. Judge, I'll begin with you. Why should Democrats back the late entrant in this race? Republicans have already labeled you the establishment candidate because you were recruited to run. Isn't that a liability in a year which seems to be favoring anti-establishment candidates?
Well, I think Chuck Grassley is the establishment candidate. Anyone that has served in the United States Senate for 36 years, served in Congress before that, really spent most of his working life in Washington, D.C., is in fact the establishment candidate. I am glad to be in this race because Washington isn't working very well, and Chuck Grassley just isn't getting the job done, so I'm really pleased to be in the fray today.
Mr. Hoge, you have said that you provide Iowa Democrats the best contrast against Senator Grassley. Is that because you are the youngest candidate standing on the stage?
Well, Kay, here's how I would characterize it. I wouldn't say that. I'd say it's because Iowans are desperately looking for new leaders who can do the job. And I've done the job for 14 years in the Iowa legislature, 4 years in the House, and 10 years in the Iowa Senate Democratic majority. They're also looking for new leaders who can uplift our democracy. And to me, that's really important. We have got to change the way we do campaigns in this country. And it's not just about campaign finance. It's also about changing the tenor of those campaigns. And I think that's what Iowans are hungry for. And I think I provide the best contrast. I think I have the most energy. I think I also am able to bring together and unite people. I've been endorsed by the Iowa Federation of Labor, the Ask Me Iowa Council 61, and the Sierra Club. So I'm bringing people together. And I think that's what Iowans are looking for, is new leaders who can get the job done, uplift our democracy, and move our country forward.
Mr. Krause, you just heard Senator Hoge say why he's the best contrast. Tell us what one priority of yours as a U.S. senator distinguishes you from the other three on the stage and makes you the best candidate to challenge Senator Grassley.
Well, I'll give you two. Two for one. The first thing, I think, is that I've had a consistent focus on economic issues. The bottom is rotting out of the middle class, and I've advocated things to fix that. I've advocated a substantial increase in the minimum wage. I was the first person to come out against Trans-Pacific Partnership. I've talked that issue till it's blue in the face, because that's what I think is going to win in November. Many issues that we have before us are important. Clean water is very important. So is global warming. But we need to fix that first. If you compare the analogy, think of an airline where there was a disaster on the plane, and the pilot calls, and he says, put your mask on before you put a mask on with that child beside you. That's what we've got to do. We've kind of got to save the middle class first so we can save the rest of it. And that's why I think that's so important. Issue two, veterans. They've been trashed, and we need to fix that.
Mr. Feagin, same question to you. What sets you apart? What one priority?
James, the first thing is, for the last 28 years, I've represented working Iowans. I've represented family farmers, small businesses, and homeowners. I hear the stories of Iowans, and I agree with Bob, that the middle class is being hollowed out. There are many people in Iowa that are worse off than when Chuck Grassley went to D.C. Having heard those stories every day for the last 28 years and stood with those people and advocated for them, I bring that real-world experience. The other thing I'll tell you, James, I've been to all 99 counties. I made it to all 99 in 2015. As of last night, with Greene County, I've been back to 45. I am hearing the pain of Iowans. And for all the promises of politicians in D.C. and in Des Moines, that pain is not getting better. I bring that to the table.
Mr. Hoge, you were among the first to join the refrain of do your job in relationship to Senator Grassley considering the nomination of Merrick Garland to be the next Supreme Court justice. Can a one-issue campaign work against a well-funded incumbent senator like Senator Grassley?
Well, first of all, I do believe that Senator Grassley ought to do his job. We're paying him over $170,000 a year. The number one job of a Senate Judiciary Chair is to hold a hearing on a presidential nominee for the Supreme Court. This obstruction is unprecedented. And if you look at the history, when somebody dies on the Supreme Court, that position has historically, back to 1910, been filled within 6 months and 13 days. But look, I was in this race before February 13th for a reason, because in general, we need to make Congress work again on the whole range of issues. I care very much about clean water, clean energy, and action to address climate change. But those aren't the only issues. We need an economy that works for everyone. We need to protect and strengthen Social Security and Medicare. We need to act on public health and public safety issues. There are a lot of issues, and the bottom line problem is Congress is so dysfunctional, it's not working, and he can't fix that problem after being in Washington, D.C. for 42 years.
Mr. Hoge, you made a point of saying just now, I was in the race before the Supreme Court vacancy occurred.
Is that pointing out that Ms. Judge came in after that time?
I think it is a reflective of my desire to do the job in Congress for Iowans. I'm not running because there was an opportunity to win. I'm running because I want to do the job for Iowans. I've done the job for my constituents in the Iowa State Legislature for the last 14 years, and I can do it in Congress, too.
Now, Mr. Judge, that gives you an opportunity. Is this the issue on which you're running? Because you've heard two other candidates here say it's uplifting the middle class, and now we're on Senator Grassley and the Judiciary Committee.
Well, we can't uplift the middle class until we make Washington work again. And my frustration boiled over in February, but it didn't start in February. It is a series of issues that you've heard outlined here of not being addressed and the frustration growing of people across this country. We've got to make Washington work again, and I believe that I can do that, and I have a skill set that I can take with me to Washington, D.C. I've worked as a mediator. I have a history of finding a middle ground, of being able to talk to people on the other side of the aisle and find a place that we can start a discussion. And it's time to do that and quit playing politics and get to problem solving.
Mrs. Judge, what are the other issues then that preceded February 13th that you think, name one that you think Senator Grassley was not addressing?
I very gladly name one, and that's Affordable Care Act. Good piece of legislation that started to ensure Americans across the country who otherwise would not have had health care insurance. Of course, it's a big piece of legislation, and there's some rough spots, and we need to go back and look at them. But it was good legislation. And if you remember, who was talking about death panels and who was talking about killing grandma? That's one good example of what Chuck Grassley's been doing the last few years.
Mr. Feagin, are Democrats in Washington, D.C. making a mistake by putting so much focus on the nomination of Merrick Garland and Senator Grassley's role in it?
They are, Kay. I believe the Washington, D.C. Democrats are tone deaf. And when we're talking about making Congress work, first thing I want to ask is, has the legislature been working? And by any objective measure, the last 2 years, it has not. We have underfunded our schools. We have closed Toledo. We have closed Mount Pleasant.
But what's the point here in the U.S. Senate race to that statement?
One of the things that my opponent, Mr. Hogue, is claiming is he's going to make Congress work, Dean. When you look objectively at the Iowa legislature the last 2 years, the Iowa legislature has been as dysfunctional as Congress. The reason that I would posit to Iowans and to you is because of PAC money. Iowa legislators took money from Dakota Access, the owner of Bakken. For that reason, there was no debate about Bakken in the Iowa legislature. In the Congress, Democrats take the same PAC money Republicans do, Dean, and it creates a schism between our base and our contributors. And one of the reasons that I believe Democrats lost in 2014, lost in 2010, and have lost virtually everything except the presidency is because our base stayed home. If I can tell you a quick story from the road, in Dubuque, Iowa, I went out to a farm. When I got out of my truck, Dean, the farmer came out of his shed, and I'm only telling people his first name is Michael. Michael F-bombed me. You effing Democrat. And I'm out in the middle of nowhere. I think they're going to find me buried in a field. So I raise my hands and I say, what did I do? What did we do? And Michael said, you Democrats, you tell us working people you're with us until Monsanto wants something, until Cargill wants something. Michael said, I get that the Republicans are the rich people, but I'm tired of having my heart broken and being betrayed by Democrats. He's part of our base. He's the reason we're losing. We have to reject PAC money, Dean.
Rob Hold?
Yeah, look, what you've just heard from Tom is more of the sort of false negative stuff that is turning people off from politics. And we've got to change the way we do politics. That is an inappropriate thing to say on television because there are young people in this state watching this television show right now. And I know that because as the parent of three kids, I know my kids, I know their friends, I know their peers, and I know that they are watching. I know kids have told me they're watching. There are young people in our audience today. And we need to uplift our democracy. And I will tell you to suggest that the Iowa legislature is dysfunctional as Congress. In the Iowa legislature, we have not shut down state government. I was there in 2011. Senator Feagin has lost his last three elections, so he's not been there. But I was there, and we cast the tough votes to keep government operating. Iowans gave us divided government. We've been doing the best we can. Would I like more funding for education? Yes. Would have I liked to have stopped the Bakken pipeline? Yes. But the support, the bipartisan support necessary to do those things hasn't been there.
Tom Fegan, you wanted to speak.
I'm Bob Cross.
I'm Bob Cross, yes.
The Garland, Judge Garland, is important as an issue because of the underlying wrong votes that the Supreme Court has made. Senator Grassley has specifically said that Citizens United, which unleashed the big money, is truly a free speech issue, and he's absolutely wrong. But if we get Judge Garland in there, there's a likelihood that that will be reversed. There are many other Supreme Court cases in voting rights, in equal rights, economic rights that need to be overturned. When we talk Judge Garland, it gives us a chance to open up that entire venue of bad, bad decisions from the Supreme Court and blame them directly on Senator Grassley.
Mr. Dodge, you're the only one who hasn't spoken on this issue, and I'm going to give you an opportunity right now because it was opened by Tom Fegan saying the Iowa legislature really hasn't been doing its job. You've been a part of that.
Well, I haven't been a part of the Iowa legislature for quite a while, and from the cheap seats, we certainly can see there were problems. But I agree with Senator Hogue. You know, this election is not about that. This election is about making Washington work. It's about replacing a senator that is no longer representing Iowa well.
As Democrats, all of you have agreed that the minimum wage has to be raised. There's some question about how much and how fast it should be raised. Also, when you raise the minimum wage, should it apply to everybody? Does that apply to teenage workers? Does it apply to people in training? Does it apply to the disabled, who a lot of them are being paid a sub-minimum wage now, less than $7.25 an hour? And let's start with you, Bob Krause.
I think it should be $15 an hour, stepped, and everybody should benefit. If you don't think young people benefit, think about what's going on with student debt. Student debt in this country today for Iowa is $30,000 per kid. It would take a $41,000 entry-level job in order to pay that back in the 10-year time
frame. But, Mr. Krause, college graduates, and that's who you're referring to, aren't coming out and working at minimum wage.
But when they're working to go to college, they work for minimum wage quite often. My daughter worked at Menards. And she made $8 an hour. She got a 10-cent an hour wage increase in 2 years. If that's not a problem that's creating and helping our students go into debt, I don't know what is.
Mr. Judge, the question is the minimum wage. Would you favor the federal government raising the federal minimum wage by how much and when?
I do favor raising the federal minimum wage, and I would like to see that raised to $15 an hour.
Right away?
And I know, no, I think that will have to be over 2-4 years in steps because that's a big jump. It, you know, if it had caught up, if we had been doing what we should have been doing, we wouldn't have this huge difference between today's minimum wage and where it should be now. And we've got to do this. We talk about the lagging economy. We talk about what are we going to do to spur this economy. The number one first thing that we should do is raise that minimum wage so that workers across the country have more disposable income in their pockets. They purchase more goods and services. And that'll start our economy going as fast as anything we can think of.
Jim? Tom Fegan, can somebody making $7.25 an hour today wait 2 years or 4 years for a raise?
We're doing a balancing here, James. We're balancing between the owner of the business and the individuals. I agree with you. At $7.25, people are starving. They're working two and three jobs. Here's what I see representing small businesses. I've got a tire store owner right now, third-generation family store, 15 employees. He's 70 years old. He hasn't taken a paycheck in the last year. What I would propose is let's move to 15 fairly quickly. I think 2 to 3 years is probably appropriate for the small business in Iowa. Here's the exception I would make, James. If the owner of a business doesn't make at least twice what their minimum wage workers make, I would allow them to opt out of the minimum wage because with my tire guy who hasn't taken a paycheck in a year, he may not be able to afford the step to 15.
You haven't weighed in here, Rob Hogan. I want to hear from you because your home county, Linn County, is studying right now, raising it individually as a county, as Johnson County has. Where do you come down on the minimum wage?
I support raising the minimum wage. I was there in 2007 as a state legislator when we increased it to 7 1/4. I was there in 2015 when Iowa Senate Democrats led the way, and we said, let's at least go to 8.75 to keep ourselves in line with our neighboring states. Unfortunately, House Republicans wouldn't take that up, and Governor Brand said wouldn't lead on it. I personally would have liked to have been higher. I would have liked to have been at least 10.10 an hour. And here's the most important thing to me. Whatever we end up settling with, whatever we can come up with, and that's going to require a change in the United States Congress because this Congress is not acting on the issue. If we can get raised the minimum wage, let's index it to inflation to take the politics out of this issue. That's what I want to see.
Kate?
Mrs. Judge, there's been discussion among the Democratic presidential candidates this year about paid leave for family and medical emergencies. Would you support establishing a payroll tax to finance that paid leave?
I think we have to look at paid leave for family emergencies. And I could tell you a personal story very quickly about my son and his wife who had a baby that was ill. Her family leave ran out, and she really was in quite a serious situation because there was no place else to go. And I think we have to address that, and if the best way is to address it through payroll tax, then that would be something I would like to study and consider.
Mr. Krause, do you think the payroll tax is the appropriate means to finance paid medical and family leave?
I think it's a historic way. We have workman's compensation, which deals with injury. We have unemployment compensation. Both of those are supported by taxes on employers and employees. I think that's a very appropriate way to do it. It follows the pattern that we've established in worker-employer relations.
Mr. Hogue, is there another way to finance this, or is the payroll tax the only way?
Well, look, I don't have a specific proposal on those details, but I am going to tell you I strongly support expanding family and medical leave and making it paid in the proper circumstances. I will tell you what, Senator Grassley, who's the real focus here, he voted against the Family and Medical Leave Act back in the Clinton administration. That was wrong. He has shown no interest in helping expand this. I have. I'm very practical in how we do that. I want to move forward on it. And my views and my consistent views in support of working families and an economy that works for all Americans is one of the reasons why I've been endorsed by the Iowa Federation of Labor and AskMe Iowa Council 61 in this race.
Mr. Feagin, how would you address people who are their own independent contractors?
Kay, I'm a small business owner. I pay the tax on my wages. I pay myself just like I pay my employees. I agree the payroll tax has been the way historically we've done it. I'd like to couple it to an increase in minimum wage so that people actually see a larger paycheck rather than a smaller one when the increase in the tax comes out for the family medical leave.
Mrs. Judge, if you get to the Senate, you'll be paid the same thing as 99 other senators, but that's not always the case in the workplace. You and many other women are pushing for equal pay for equal work. The question is, how do you enforce that? Do we have a government agency that does random audits and levies penalties if employers aren't paying equal pay? And, you know, or should employers have to disclose wages so everyone can see what's being paid and who's receiving how much?
Well, first of all, equal pay for equal work is a no-brainer. We should all be striving for that, and I would hope that that would soon become a law, the law. Whatever method of monitoring that is appropriate would be fine, but of course, someone who is not being treated fairly has the right to a hearing in the courts, and so that would also be a final arbiter.
Yes, Bob Krause?
Well, I think the Lilly Ledbetter Act answers that fairly specifically. The Lilly Ledbetter Act was the first bill signed by President Obama. It relates to a case where a company hid the payroll information from a lady that was being discriminated against. The Supreme Court, the conservative Supreme Court, went and said that that was okay to hide the data. And oh, by the way, when you hid it, if it passes statute of limitations, there was no recourse for the employee.
So you would require employers to release that information, make it public?
I think that it is something that is very equitable. I know that it goes against tradition in many workplaces, but I know I worked, the last place that I worked, they had a secrecy law. They knocked it out, and I think it made a positive difference in the workplace.
Tom Fieger to Rob Hoge, do you disagree with anything that's been said? Otherwise, we're going to move on to the next question.
I defer to Rob. Let him answer.
Well, I've got one quick thing. It is already against the law to discriminate on wages based on gender. That's already against the law. The question is the enforcement of it. And yes, clearly we need to make it more enforceable.
Okay.
Speaking of the courts, the Des Moines Water Works has filed a lawsuit challenging the way farm chemical runoff is managed in three northwest Iowa counties. Mrs. Judge, you have said that lawsuit hasn't moved the needle and has just put dollars in lawyers' pockets. You support an increase in the state sales tax to finance water conservation projects on farms. Critics of that approach say farmers should shoulder the cleanup costs. What do you say to those critics?
We have a critical issue in our state and, in fact, in our country, all up and down our rivers, and that is an issue of water quality. We are at a point that has to be addressed, and it has to be addressed now. I believe that the best way that we can do it in Iowa is to fund the Conservation Trust Fund, which was passed in 2010. Has been sitting empty since that time. We could, in fact, if we raise the sales tax 0.3 cents, we could put $100 million in that fund to work on water quality projects. And I think that's the way to go. And we should, you know, we need to do that. And I was very disappointed that that did not pass the Iowa legislature this year.
Mr. Fegan, you've been critical of Senator Hoge because the legislature didn't address that this year. Do you have another plan for addressing water quality?
James, I actually do, and I want to say that I fundamentally disagree with both Rob and Patty on this. The taxpayers of Iowa should not have sales tax raised to bribe the polluters. Here's the answer from the federal level. We're all running for senator, not governor. First thing is, let's change the Farm Bill. The Farm Bill currently has a soil conservation requirement. If you qualify for federal benefits, you must minimize the amount of soil leaving your farm. Let's add a clean water requirement. That's the first law. The second law is let's amend the Clean Water Act. Let's amend it to apply to dispersed sources. I don't care if the manure is running out of a pipe, James, or running off the field. It should apply. Chuck Grassley has been blocking the Clean Water Act. The third one is a law nobody's talking about. It's called FIFRA, the Federal Insecticide, Fungicide, and Rodenticide Act. It gives chemical manufacturers blanket immunity. I would flip FIFRA to impose liability. And one of the things about water quality nobody's talking about is Roundup and the herbicides. We have got so much Roundup in our environment, 75% of the rain that falls from the sky has Roundup in it.
Senator Hoge, is that criticism of the legislature and you fair?
Well, first of all, let me tell you, I have been a proven and consistent leader for clean water, clean energy, and action to address climate change. Throughout my entire 14 years in the Iowa legislature. And here's the difference. On this side, you have somebody who wants to blame everybody and blame everybody and blame everybody. And on this side, you have somebody who's just staying with farmers and has been blaming the Des Moines Water Works. I'm the only person in this race who has united farmers, environmentalists, business leaders, and cities to work together through the Cedar River Watershed Coalition. I have passed the Watershed Improvement Review Board. I have passed the Iowa Flood Center. I've passed legislation for watershed management authorities, and I've passed additional funding. And anybody who thinks we can solve this problem without additional public funding is naive.
Mr. Judge, you're the only one who hasn't spoken on this, and he said...
Actually, I did speak on it, Dean. I think I began the conversation, but I will say, just to clarify...
Because Rob Hoge just said on this side, right. And he referred, I think, to you.
I think he referred to me, so I want to just clarify that I certainly am not and have not blamed the Des Moines Water Works. My statement is that I do not think the lawsuit that was filed by the Des Moines Water Works is going to solve the problem. I think the problem is going to require an extensive program that is going to have measures of research, of monitoring, and until we do that, and until we make that commitment as a state, we will not go forward.
Mr. Krause.
Rob Krause wanted to get a word in.
Yeah. It's a national problem. Illinois has just as big a problem as we do.
Should the federal government regulate it instead of the state?
Well, what I advocate is that that we tie the clean water requirements that we need to the right to get federal crop insurance, and that we use that as kind of a balancing point. I think one thing that farmers legitimately have a problem with is they don't deal well with bureaucrats. We need somebody in between. I propose that the board of directors of the drainage districts, which all have a board elected by the farmers, where there's no a drainage district, the county board of supervisors, put together a plan for each watershed that may be 100 square miles, maybe 50 square miles, whatever. But they have a plan so they can get the most efficient use of their money in getting that nitrate and phosphate out of the water.
Mr. Krause, I think we have it. And Rob Hogue, you wanted to say something, and then we're moving on.
Yeah, I did want to say something. The Des Moines Water Works has a real problem. Like other communities across this state, they are having trouble providing drinking water that complies with federal safe drinking water standards. And I know that there's been the criticism of the lawsuit, but you cannot ask them to give up that lawsuit, and that's what the Partnership for Clean Water, so-called Partnership for Clean Water, that former Lieutenant Governor Judge was affiliated with, has asked them to do, just said this: you should dismiss this lawsuit, you should give it up. And the Des Moines Register actually called it a smear campaign.
That is not
the approach that solves the problem. We've got a real problem. We've got to solve it.
Okay.
Mr. Feagin, Iowa senators often have a lead role in drafting the farm bill. You have said that it's time to stop riding the corn and soybean roller coaster and change the next farm bill so it focuses on locally grown fruits
Correct.
And vegetables.
Correct.
How do you feed the world that way?
Okay, we're not feeding the world with our corn. We're burning our corn for ethanol. Let's be real. We're raising commodities on most of our farms. In the 1920s, Iowa led the nation in tomato production and apple production. And at that moment, we had 11 congressmen. Now that we've been riding the corn and soybean roller coaster, we're down to four, if you count Steve King. The way back for rural Iowa is to go back to growing food, Kay. We in Iowa buy $3.8 billion worth of groceries. 85% of that comes from somewhere else. The answer to feeding the world, actually, is micro-farming, where farmers apply nutrients in 1 meter by 1 meter square. What we're doing in Iowa, Kay, is not feeding the world.
Mrs. Judge, as the former Secretary of Agriculture in the state, is that the approach that you would champion as a senator?
As a senator, I would ask first to be on the Ag Committee. That's my number one ask. And as part of that committee, we will be tasked with writing the new farm bill. I think it's important when we talk about that farm bill that we enact a bill that protects family farmers and makes certain that there is a safety net for them. Of course, the markets are very volatile, and there are times as a farmer when you don't make any money and, in fact, you lose money. We cannot afford to lose any more of those family farms in Iowa. The second thing is that farm bill has got to have a very strong conservation water quality component with it this time.
Mr. Hogue, would you seek a new approach in farm legislation? You live in a community that takes raw commodities and processes them.
I do, and let me tell you, I strongly support family farmers. It's one of the reasons why I'm so proud to have the endorsements of former State Representative Mark Kuhn and former State Senator Jack Kibbe, because we share this vision that family farmers should be supported. I believe that we need better conservation practices in our federal farm programs. I do support biofuels and the advance of biofuels, not just ethanol, but also biodiesel and advanced biofuels. I think that's important. And I strongly support local foods. My wife and I have been customers of a community-supported agriculture for about 15 years and been very actively involved in that. And that is the fastest growing part of our agricultural sector today.
Mr. Krause, you've been a champion of ethanol. Mr. Feagin said we shouldn't be growing corn for ethanol. Do you agree?
I think it's a horrid mistake. 47% of
horrid
our corn in
to
Iowa.
Do what?
What?
Horrid mistake to do what?
Horrid mistake to get rid of RFS and end the ethanol program. And it's a mistake because 47% of our corn today goes for ethanol. If we pull the plug on that at a time when farmers are losing $100 an acre on corn production, we are going to send this state back into something similar to the 1980s. And we need to actually go the other way. We need to go to E15 to soak up that surplus. If we don't soak up that surplus, we're still heading in the wrong way. It's $4.5 billion that is produced and sent out of state in the form of ethanol. It supports 25% of the national ethanol production.
I think we have your point. And what you're saying, during the 1980s, the bottom fell out of farm prices and there was a farm crisis.
And I'm going to happen again if this if we end RFS.
I'm going to ask each of you now to raise your hands while our two reporters here reconnoiter a bit and rephrase our questions, because we're running out of time and we're running short. Just raise your hands, if you will. Would you put a ceiling on farm payments to individual farmers? Put a ceiling on farm payments. All four of you would. All right? What about raise your hand if you support legalizing medical marijuana across the nation? All four of you. What about recreational marijuana? None of you. All right? And would you support and do you endorse President Obama's recent letter to schools across the nation, giving them guidance on transgender restrooms? All four of you. All right. Thank you.
Mrs. Judge, you said during a recent event in April that you have always supported organized labor. Does that mean you disagreed with Governor Chuck Colver's veto of a bill that would have expanded collective bargaining rights for Iowa union members?
Legislation is always difficult. The governor looked at that long and hard and made his decision. And I wish that we could have worked more closely with labor and come up with a bill that was satisfactory to all parties. And I regret that that didn't happen.
What would you pursue in the U.S. Senate to expand worker rights?
I would hope that we would have a good working relationship with organized labor. I believe wholeheartedly, Kay, that the middle class is in America today because of their right to collectively bargain and to organize. And we need to make certain that workers' rights are protected. And when we talk about trade agreements, which we have to have because we're an export state, and we know that, but we have to be sure that workers' rights are addressed.
The Trans-Pacific Partnership, which President Obama has championed and is one of his legacy issues, is opposed by labor. Farmers, as Mrs. Judge mentioned, support it. Mr. Krauts, which side are you on?
I oppose the TPP because it's basically NAFTA on steroids. Wages in the United States, according to the Economic Policy Institute, have gone down $1,800 per person on an average for workers, and they can track it back to CAFTA and NAFTA, the two major free trade agreements. We don't need that to do again, and we don't need to make agreements with countries where the rule of law may not extend outside of their national capital. We need to work these things one at a time.
Mr. Hogue, did your president negotiate a bad deal in the TPP?
Well, I'm going to tell you that based on what I know, I'm not in favor of the TPP because I believe that it should raise worker standards, environmental standards, and consumer standards up. I, for example, think that Americans should know, be allowed to know where the country of origin is for their meat. So I'm concerned about the loss of sovereignty. I want to go back to something really quick on the labor question. I supported the expansion of collective bargaining rights. I know that the legislators offered Governor Colver and Lieutenant Governor Judge whatever changes we needed to make in that bill to make it acceptable, and I know that that offer was refused. And here's the bigger point. We do not want to have the 2016 U.S. Senate election be a rerun of the 2010 gubernatorial election. That would be very bad for Democrats. That's why I think we need new leaders who can uplift our democracy, unite people, get the job done.
Ms. Judge, do you want to respond to that?
Well, yes, I do.
Because you were Lieutenant Governor at the time.
I was, and I think I will just respond with this. I think Senator Hogue may not be well informed.
How so?
I don't believe that there was a lot of back and forth and negotiation on that particular piece of legislation.
Mr. Feagin, the Trans-Pacific Partnership has not only been portrayed as a way to boost U.S. exports into the region, but to solidify relationships there to counter China, which is trying to have a more robust presence in the world. What do you think the Trans-Pacific Partnership should do in regards to foreign policy and economic policy?
Okay, my biggest concern is that it appears that President Obama is leveraging the wage of workers in America against Chinese hegemony. I'm against the TPP. Let's be clear about that. I do not believe that it protects our sovereignty. I don't believe that it allows us to do things like country of origin labeling. It does not give us the discretion to protect our consumers, Kay. Let's find other ways to compete with the Chinese in the Pacific Rim other than balancing on the back of workers.
Mr. Feagin, you've talked about representing people in bankruptcy proceedings for the past 28 years, and all of you on the stage have said you're for middle-class tax relief. First, what is middle class? And second, what would you propose to give that relief to the middle class? What steps would you take?
James, I don't know that we are going to protect the middle class, or I want to talk about working people rather than middle class, because middle class is one of those. Is it $10,000 a year? Is it $500,000? I do believe low-income earners, those making less than $50,000, do need additional tax breaks. I would leave the tax bracket from $50,000 to $250,000 unchanged. I would raise the marginal rate of people that make above $250,000, probably doesn't apply to anybody in this room, and people that make above $1 million. I would like to go to what I would call the pre-Bush tax rates, and I believe that would help us to close the deficit without balancing the budget on the backs of working people.
Mr. Hogue, what steps would you take?
Well, I believe strongly in progressive taxation, and that means that the people who are wealthiest or earn the most income pay the biggest percentage in taxes. And I will just tell you, we've got to have a reality check here. The national debt in this country went from less than $1 trillion when Senator Grassley was first elected to more than $19 trillion today, more than $50,000 per American. So if you have candidates up here promising you massive tax cuts, I don't think that's realistic. In the Iowa legislature, I have voted for some tax cuts. I've voted against some tax cuts. I've voted for some tax increases. I've voted against some tax increases. I have a record on that. The question comes down to, do we have the right mix of taxes to generate the revenue we need to meet our obligations, to reduce the deficit, and to invest strategically in our future? And so those are my views on that.
Mrs. Judge, we've heard terms like progressive and middle class and working class. Can you be more specific about what you would do, what sort of tax relief you would offer?
Well, I think the first thing we can do is roll back the Bush tax cuts on higher wage earners. And then the second thing we need to do is to take a very careful look at all the tax loopholes that the wealthiest people in this country are using to avoid paying what I consider their fair share of taxes.
What about the tax loopholes like mortgage deduction or charitable giving? Would you change those?
I think that that the ones that we're talking about are the ones that really are allowing people and corporations to not pay taxes. Or to pay a very, very marginal amount of tax.
Well, I didn't quite get the answer to that. Would you eliminate the mortgage deduction?
I think working families depend on that mortgage deduction on their homes, and that's very solid. That is a very different thing than the wealthiest 1% or huge corporations finding ways to not pay taxes because they have the ability to do that.
Just let me raise your hands. Anyone up here who would not eliminate the mortgage deduction? If you keep it the way it is, raise your hand.
One exception, Dean. I would only apply it to the first home, not to the second home.
Got it. Jim?
I'm good.
Okay, Kay.
Mr. Krause, I'll ask you a tax question.
Okay.
You worked in the Carter administration in the Department of Transportation.
Mm-hmm.
The gas tax is a declining revenue source because vehicles are getting more efficient and vehicles are running on electricity and natural gas. Do you have a formula by which the federal government should be financing infrastructure, transportation infrastructure, that's different from the current gas tax?
Well, I think that raising the gas tax as a federal prerogative is a good way to finance infrastructure, in part because it has a positive impact on global warming and climate change. The more we raise that tax, the more we keep it away from the Arabs, because the Arabs will take that and profit anyhow, and the more we cause a pressure to get more efficient autos.
Rob Hoog?
Well, one of the things is these questions are kind of hypothetical for the other three candidates here on the stage. Very real for me, because I was there, and I'm somebody who voted for the gas tax, because I believe in infrastructure. And Kate, there's a mistake in your premise of your question. Electric vehicles and natural gas vehicles may not pay on the fuel tax side, but they pay very heavily on the vehicle registration side under Iowa state law. And so that's a misperception to say they're not paying anything.
Federal law?
What?
You're running to be a United States senator.
Yeah,
and for example,
I think it was a mistake for Senator Grassley to vote for the last gas tax increase in 1993. That was part of that 4.3-cent increase was part of what helped trigger the economic success of the late 1990s that I think we'd all like to replicate.
Tom Fagan, Gaff.
Very quickly, the damage to our road infrastructure is done by 18-wheelers. I represent a lot of them. They do pay a lot of tax, guys. They pay $26,000, $27,000. The reality is an over-the-road truck that runs 5 days a week carrying 80,000 pounds actually does three times the damage. Here's how we pay for infrastructure without balancing on the backs of consumers. We raise the excise tax on 18-wheelers. Raising the excise tax does three things quickly. One, raises money for infrastructure. Two, it makes products from foreign countries more expensive to bring inland and gives Iowa manufacturers an edge. The third thing is it reduces carbon footprint.
Mr. Fagan, let's stick with you. You've expressed concern with President Obama's drone policy, using drones to target Taliban and ISIS leaders in the Middle East. Do you oppose that? I mean, why do you oppose that? What's your argument against drone strikes, some which come from Des Moines, are controlled by people here in Des Moines?
First thing, James, the drones should be only used in those countries where we've declared hostilities. I don't believe that we should unilaterally pick countries. The reason is drone technology is so cheap, James. If we say we as the United States unilaterally can strike anyone, anywhere, anytime, every group in the world can say, me too. The second thing is our drones are controlled by both the CIA and the military. I would move all of them over to the military side. The second thing is the weapon of choice for the Reaper and Predators is the Hellfire missile, James. It's an anti-tank missile that leaves a 25-foot crater. And one of the things the Obama administration has stopped reporting is the number of innocent casualties. We're creating more terrorists with our drone policy than we're killing.
Mr. Krause, you've served in the military. What's your outlook on this?
I cannot, in good conscience, oppose the use of drones to take out terrorist leaders. If we take that course, we will guarantee U.S. battlefield casualties, and I'm not willing to say that I'm going to lose soldiers or airmen in manned aircraft because there wasn't a drone available to do the same thing.
Anyone feel differently? Mrs. Judge?
Yes.
Mr. Hogue?
Yes. Tom Fagan.
One quick reply. I have no problem with the use of drones in combat zones. I agree that they are preferable in combat zones to boots on the ground. I'm talking about countries where there are no declared hostilities.
Kate? Speaking of boots on the ground, Mr. Hogue, would you vote to send troops to Iraq and Syria?
Well, the number one thing is Congress should actually vote on that, right? It shouldn't be something where the president's doing it without congressional authorization. So we should either get Congress to authorize it or it shouldn't happen, and that's part of the dysfunction of Congress that we really need to fix. Look, these issues are extraordinarily complicated. I believe in the United States being strong, smart, engaged in the world actively to promote peace, And I think it depends on it. I mean, these are really difficult calls, but it comes down to, do you have broad domestic and international support? Do you have a discrete objective? Are you using the force that you can do it? And if something goes wrong, do you have an exit strategy? That's my view on this. And it would depend on the circumstances.
Let me ask it this way right now. Do you approve of President Obama's current policy in Syria and Iraq?
I think they need to get back to Congress and make sure Congress has authorized that.
Mrs.
I would
Judge?
Add on that they did ask Congress for a declaration about a year ago, and Congress took no action. And that's why President Obama is under the old order, the old declaration going back to 9/11.
Ms. Judge?
I would not ever vote to authorize American troops in foreign lands engage in war unless I was absolutely certain that all negotiation was over, that there was no opportunity for further negotiation or talk.
Do you oppose, then, the current administration policy?
I think that the president has done what he has, and I would support that. But before we would ever commit more troops, or if that issue were before me as a United States senator, I would have to have compelling evidence that there was no other alternative except American troops.
Jim?
Sticking with the military issues, Senator Hoge, you have college-age daughter.
Yes.
Do you think she should have to register for the draft and be eligible for the draft should it be reinstated?
Yes, I believe our young women should register for the draft just like our young men have to.
Mr. Hoge or Mr. Feagin, you also have daughters?
That's fair trade. I called you
yes.
before, James. My children are from ages 34 to 25. I do agree that young women should be eligible for the draft. Here's an interesting factor that I've heard from the military. The volunteer army can no longer be staffed by young men because too few of our young men in America can pass the fitness test. And so out of necessity, our military is turning to women to fill the ranks of the volunteer army because we don't have enough young men that can pass the physical.
I would say on that women have been serving in our military back to the Civil War, back to Molly Pitcher in the Revolutionary War.
But what
There's
about
no
registering
such thing
for
as
the
a necessity.
Draft?
It's because the women themselves have come forth with their pursuit of the equal rights to stand
but the question,
with the men
the question is
on the draft.
Whether or not they should, Bob Cross, whether or not they should register for the draft, be required as men are.
Yes.
All right.
Ms. Judge?
I would say yes also, but I would like to add that I hope that it is not necessary, again, to impose a draft.
Candidates, it appears Hillary Clinton has secured enough delegates to win your party's presidential nomination. Will you support her, Mr. Feagin? And do you have any concerns about the latest revelation about her use of email as Secretary of State?
Kay, I'm going to wait until after the convention. I understand that you've decided, and a number of people have decided, that she's got to secure it. I'm going to wait until after Philadelphia to make that. I don't know enough about the revelations. I don't know where that's going to lead. I will tell you quickly, there are two areas where
We have 90 seconds, so
All right.
I need to move on. Mr. Hoge?
I will support Hillary Clinton if she's the nominee, and I agree with Bernie Sanders that I'm sick and tired of hearing about those damned emails.
Mrs. Judge?
I will support either one of the candidates for the president on the Democratic ticket.
Mr. Krause?
I will support either one, and I think it's important that we all say that because that is the path to defeat. If we say we will not support the nominee, we're going to be in the same boat that the Republicans are.
I have a quick question then to end. Ms. Judge, you've already said that you would prefer to be on the Agriculture Committee if elected to the U.S. Senate. What about you, Bob Cross?
I want to go on the Senate Finance Committee. I know that's aiming high, but they do taxes and they do appropriations. The most powerful committee, formerly chaired by Senator Grassley, and he did many wrong things in that position.
Tom Feagin?
Top three, agriculture, finance, and judiciary.
All right. And Rob Hoge?
You're not confined by your committees. I know that as a legislator, but I would want to be on the Judiciary Committee so we can get these judges confirmed.
Thank you very much. We are out of time, and thank you very much for the time that you've given us here tonight and given the people of Iowa. It's been an insight. Thank you.
Thank you.
Concluding the special Iowa Press edition with the four Democrats seeking the nomination for the U.S. Senate seat now held by Republican Chuck Grassley. A special thanks to, as I just did, our candidates, and to our reporters, Kay and Jim, and to the audience here with us in the Iowa Public Television Maytag Auditorium. And I'm also inviting you to watch our regular edition of Iowa Press. That's tomorrow night. We'll have Iowa political reporters Dave Price, Aaron Murphy, James Lynch, and Kay Henderson. And we'll be analyzing this Senate primary debate, the issues, and the candidates. That'll be at 7 o'clock Friday night and repeating Sunday at noon. So for our entire Iowa Public Television crew here in the Maytag Auditorium at Iowa Public Television in Johnston, Iowa, I'm Dean Borg. Thanks for joining us, and good night.
Funding for Iowa Press was provided by Friends, the Iowa Public Television Foundation.
I'm a veteran.
I'm a builder.
I'm a volunteer.
I am a teacher.
I'm a banker.
I'm an Iowa banker.
No matter who you are, there is an Iowa banker who is ready to help you get where you want to go. Iowa Bankers, allowing you to discover the genuine difference of Iowa banks.
Iowa Communications Network, ICN's Broadband Matters campaign advocates for access to high-speed broadband in all corners of Iowa, for education, public safety, health care, government, and economic development. Information is available at broadbandmatters.com.
Iowa Community Foundations, an initiative of the Iowa Council of Foundations, connecting donors to the causes and communities they care about, for good, for Iowa, forever. Details at iowacommunityfoundations.org. The Associated General Contractors of Iowa, the public's partner in building Iowa's highway, bridge, and municipal utility infrastructure.
The Arlene McKeever Endowment Fund at the Iowa Public Television Foundation, a fund established to support local programming on Iowa Public Television.